Our discussion today is on the joy of movement in play and fitness, just for the health of it. And I'm Joanne Hult. I'm from the University of Maryland, teaching in history and philosophy of sport, and particular interest in fitness for the adults. And so I have worked in it some. I live it some. And some I eat and vegetate like the, the couch potato, like the rest of us. But since you're here, I'm sure it's not out of guilt, so we will assume that all of us are believe in, if not function in, the world of fitness. My sort of lesson plan is here. My audiovisual aids are around, and I'll pull them down or off as I need them. For the women, I only have one extra discussion, except when we get to exercises that perhaps are not good for women that you may have been told to do for the last 20 years as for your health. Otherwise, our discussion, I think, hits equally upon the male and the female and the responsibility that we have. My interest in this is not just professional at all, but it is probably much more an interest in what I call total living, total wellness, wholeness, and the difference between what I call body and mind separation, as Luther was perfectly willing to do to us, but before him, Plato did it, and Aristotle did it, and a great number of our academic world has attempted to separate the mind and the body, and to say that the mind is, of course, superior to the body, and that the body must be submissive to the mind. My concept is much more that we are, in fact, whole people, body, mind, and spirit, and that our lives divide itself up and ought to, not just with the mind or the spirit as the focus of the world all of the time, but rather, in addition, the body, and the body in fitness, the body in health, the body in play, ought as well to be a part. And that I call embodiment. And as we work and play, that the healthiest human being are those who have this embodiment. And it doesn't mean you might not have a handicap. Even in the definition of fitness, it is fitness within your own being. And so what is fit for me is not fit for you. All of you will live just as long and just as happily, whether you're forced to the top of Martin's Ridge, or Buckskin, or Copper Basin, or Copper Peak. But within your own, if you see the outdoor world as a part of your life, it would be nice to be able to get to heart. And as I see it, this is a discussion that should have been Monday instead of Friday. I was telling a couple people that I am sure that almost all of you, with my pace, could be at Heart Lake, could go to 10 Mile Falls, or almost any of the areas around here. In the first place, embodiment brings to you a will to do it, and it's really attitude that has a great deal to do with success rate and even some of our health. Where our bodies are not perfect, but our thinking about the capabilities of our body is nearer to that perfection. I think it was William James who said something like, by changing the inner attitudes of our minds, we can change the outer aspects of our living. And I think that's what an effort towards fitness, towards health, really does for us. And that some of the books that talk about medicine, love, and health, and using the emotions to cure yourself has some grain of truth in it, and that we need to think about that when we visit people in the hospital, when we ourselves are sick, when our children are sick, that we need to think about that positive approach to wellness. And then when the crisis is over, not to forget it in terms of following through on, I am going to be a healthy individual, more healthy than I am at this moment. And so there's no question that I have a platform here, and that platform is for you to commit yourself to just a little bit more thought about yourself and to care enough about yourself to move a little bit more towards that fitness. I think in the past that this really was the goal of fitness. That is, you men had to be fit for our country, and that we thought of fitness as a way of life for somebody else, that it was not an individual thing. And so you had to be fit for the war, particularly for many of you, the Second World War. For a few of you, we're talking about the Vietnam War. Unpleasant as it was to most of the young people, the Cold War in the 50s, Sputnik, brought about a new scientific emphasis, but also an emphasis that we've got to be the winner. Out of which came, I believe, our whole new Olympic movement, in which war was merely transferred to the athletic field. And I'm on, and have been on, the Olympic Committee, but I'm not interested in the Olympics being a concept of dominance and superiority. I'm interested in it being a pursuit of excellence. And I'm on the United States Educational Council in hopes that we can bring this thought much more into the school systems and sort of into the world. I'm also on an International Olympic Academy group whose purpose is really that we move the world of sport to remember that it is play and that it comes out of play. It does not come out of athletics. And it doesn't mean that one isn't competitive, one doesn't attempt to develop a way of life in which competition can be a part of it, but that a whole lot of us need to think much more about play, and that play is quite different when we're out playing or competing against one another. And so my first kind of thought process is to think of play as more voluntary, outside the ordinary, in which bonding of adults and children can occur, where there are rules and regulations which can be changed if they don't fit the group, that it certainly is in a certain time and space, and that each of us know, as we're kind of competing with one another, on what level are we doing this. I think a great example, if any of you are left from our volleyball here in the years past, I mean volleyball. There's volleyball, and then there is volleyball. And I was a member of volleyball. And that meant those of us playing over here, we're really somewhat into domination and superiority. You folks over there can pursue your excellence. And so it was clear to everybody playing that we're playfully being dominant and superior over here. And it's a whole different game. And it's important, I think, when any of you decide to play, that you kind of discuss with one another that we're in the same game. We're here for fun, we're here to reduce, we're here for competition, but I want to be better than I was yesterday for you and for me. And it's an attitude, I think, that we're losing in our society. And it's important, as I told you the other day, for your grandkids, for everybody, but it's also important for you. So when you play with your kids, most of you know when you play with your kids, you're playing to help them to become better, and you're enjoying it But you're not crucifying them. You're not trying to dominate them. You like when they beat you. And that's kind of the attitude that I hope one takes as you move into play and life. I suppose I should have started today with the biblical references of why I'm allowed to do this. But I think it's clear to you that it's sort of, in order to have life and to have it more abundantly, that the state of health and the state of play is a part of it. And if we can just think about playing more and that it's almost a responsibility. The problem with that, of course, is that when you put a purpose on it, then it loses its intrinsic values. But if you can set aside that my play and my leisure are really a part of embodiment and my total being, it may free you up for more of a play life. And I think that that's kind of what we're looking for, a balance between all of these. And so I think that my fitness theme here is a good one until it talks about our nation, and that instead we want to be talking and much more, and this is the only sameness for you other people, about the freedom of fitness in other ways as an individual. I like the Marine Corps Marathon, not because I like the war effort of our country, but because it is a marathon with 10,000 people. Everybody who wants to be in this marathon is invited to come. The New York Marathon and the Boston Marathon are now paying the athletes. And there's a big struggle for who will be invited. What is the time limit to be in the Boston or in the New York Marathon? Also, the Marine Marathon, in its pursuit of fitness, has first a wheelchair contest in which they start about a half an hour before any of the rest. And their purpose, some of them, is to go 10 Ks, which is really 6 miles, and they have a marking point for them, or to complete the course if they can. They are not racing wheelchairs. And so it's to make the effort to be with the group. There's also a group of blind individuals who run beside those who can see. Deaf are invited. Handicapped are invited to pursue the race, to start early if they want to, or to wait and start later. And they hold all the streets of Washington, D.C. open until 4 o'clock that afternoon. Which means I could almost walk in the marathon. And that's the concept that I want us to start with today, is that all of us can do something. All of us cannot walk 26.3 miles, nor do we want to. Most of us do not want to. Most of us ought not in relation to our bodies. Brutality and violence to the body is not my message. I think we've got plenty of that on the outside. To push the body some is to bring it fitness. To beat on the body and to beat on the legs for 26 miles, you know, may not be the effort that we are sort of trying there. You also see my bicycle sticking out, and my bicycle will come back. My bicycle is important to me and the symbol of it because it freed women. In 1880s to the 1890s, particularly in the 90s, is the first freedom of women and the dress reform that comes out of riding a bicycle. And the stationary bicycle is today, I think, what the moving bicycle of the 1890s was. That is, it is freeing the elderly, particularly, to exercise. And that it is one of the most important, fundamental kinds of equipment anybody has invented. And so if you're wondering about the stationary bicycle, yes, it is good for men, it is good for women, it's good for kids if they have the patience. And you can do something else. I have been able to fix my bicycle and book so I can read at the same time. Somebody else was telling about watching the Donahue show at the same time. But the outside bicycle is also one of the fundamental ways, I think, of gaining fitness. For those of you who are interested in ways of easily developing fitness. In California, they have the three-wheel bicycle, and it's a wonderful invention in both California and in Maryland now, in the leisure villages. They have three-wheel bicycles, and they are taking men and women as part of transportation, but it's also at the same time getting a type of fitness that they would never get sitting watching their TVs or sending somebody else to the store for them. And so I like my bicycle sticking out here for all of us to look at as I check my next lesson plan. I also have here, I think, the bicycle for the early years for women. Actually, remember, men started the bicycle and the races. By 1896, the men were using the bicycle for work, and so they weren't so interested in the bicycle, and the women began to use the bicycle more and more. And they continued to do that into the 20th century. Also, co-education became a part, because of the bicycle, of life. Outdoor recreation and tandem bikes were used by the end of the 80s. By men and women who therefore didn't have to be chaperoned. Some way or other, it was okay if a man and a woman got on a bicycle and went outside of town and had a picnic. Some way you didn't need to be chaperoned. If you walked there, then the eyebrows went up and maybe we had to have chaperones. So the bicycle is really kind of an important part of our lives. And I like to think of it. But in our world, as we now look at, so what is the problem within our world that has me here saying that it's so important that you bicycle, or that you find your own kind of a marathon, or that you find your own kind of world? Here's our problems as I see it. I hate to mention this, but we as a nation, this is. And this little combination here appeared in a book in 1932 called Spectatoritis. And a man named J.B. Nash, who is probably the foremost leader in leisure and in the concept of embodiment, the mind, body, and spirit, and kind of muscular Christianity or the YMCA kind early. Concept of the YMCA before it got all competitive, too. J.B. Nash comes out of this. And even as early as the Depression years, he's telling us that our future youth are in danger because we are eating ourselves to death, worrying ourselves to death, smoking ourselves to death, drinking ourselves to death, doping ourselves to death. And by doping, he meant sleeping pills, wake-up pills, too many aspirin per individual, and that we are sitting ourselves to death. And one of my, in fact, a philosophy of sport teacher was talking about sitting ourselves to death. And his statement was, in the future, really, we don't have to have really bodies. What we need is a huge seat and two huge eyes to watch television. And with the new term, a potato couch, I love it. You could call it something else on Monday night for the football games, or Saturday afternoon for the football, the baseball, the ice hockey, all of these kinds of games that demand that the ritual is beer and pretzels and sitting, and then the post on it. And that we really don't use up very many calories in that kind of life. Not that I don't watch football. About the only sport I don't watch is baseball, and if the Cubs ever got anywhere, I might go back. I may have a long time away from baseball. So these are the things that's happening, as I see it. So what can we do about all of this? We have easy solutions, of course. We stop all of it, right? I mean, there's really nothing to this. So I could end, and you all could take a walk, but I'm not going to, because I want to go over a little bit of this to kind of give you a background on what you really might do in relation to these problems. I'm not going to touch smoking, drinking, and doping, except to say, don't do it.
Just say no.
Yeah, say no to drugs. Say no to drinks. Say no to smoking. Although we are finding that a glass of wine does no harm to the bloodstream, and that you know, the Swedish idea of before you go to bed to have a schnapps or whatever may really not be very harmful. But of course, we do know the harm of smoking, and we have the proof of it in all of the research that's being done. Within the drinking, unfortunately, I have to put coffee because caffeine is turning out to be a stimulant that is very harmful to the blood vessels, to the blood system, and certainly to the heart, and that it is causing pulsations in the heart as well as stomach difficulties. And so the decaf is a much better solution, and what you do is close your eyes and pretend that you're really getting in this area. And of course, in the doping area, it is very serious for your children, much more in a sense than for most of you. In fact, we're of course finding that an aspirin a day, particularly for men, may be good for the heart, that to quickly disperse a headache is a good plan, particularly if you're going to have to go on with your world for the rest of the day. And so in the doping, I'm thinking of more serious things. If any of you have particularly male athlete in your church, in your groups, you need to particularly talk about steroids. And steroids are a false kind of stimulant which gives power to the muscle, or that you can develop the strength of your muscles if you haven't heard of that. It's good for inflammations. It's also a perfectly good drug that they're using in healing in relation to the eyes. But steroids are being taken by junior high and high school, particularly boys, but also weightlifting women. Perhaps in East Germany, who cares enough about the Olympics, it's also being used by swimmers, by track women. And it's a form of athletic enhancing sport, dope, and that's why I wanted to bring it to your attention. But let's start out with eating, because the problem with eating is that it shows. And we can't hide from it if we're eating ourselves to death. But what's the major problem with our thoughts continuously being on dieting? What's the problem with that? What do you find with your friends? Not you, of course.
Lose and gain,
and it is not good for the body. Because the body chemistry then is constantly in an uproar. And if you happen to be in the process of losing, it lowers your resistance, your immune system, and there's a much greater chance of illness in a dieting routine. For women, particularly going below 900 calories is inviting disease. Even cold, the common cold, or any other kind of virus which is in the air. For men, going below 1,200 is very dangerous, and perhaps 1,500 calories if you're into the calorie comp. This does not mean that you ought never to be on a diet, but it's that weight, that fast and slow. It is more a way of life that becomes important for you. And we know that we can live with a lot less red meat. You know it this week. You're all surviving nicely, and there's very little red meat. Those of you with cholesterol, what do you have to be careful of? All the fatty foods, eggs particularly, unfortunately dairy products. There are new dairy products, however, as there are cold meats, which really remove the fat content. But you need to be very careful to read what's in the various kinds of products. Just because it's a new product on the market and Weight Watchers do it doesn't mean that it is a good kind of policy. So you should never really be on a diet without your doctor's permission, no matter what your age is. More pushing, the exercise of pushing yourself away from the table is probably more central to how to deal. But if you are on a diet, what else has to go with a diet? Exercise. Everyone has that quite clear. And there can be very little weight loss without exercise. Then the question comes, how vigorous ought the exercise to be? How often ought the exercise to be? And as we move into that, I think there are three things that you need from exercise, which also then adds to your fitness. And that is developing endurance, which is really what part of your insides are we dealing with?
Heart.
Yeah, the heart. Cardiovascular efficiency. So the heart and lungs. And therefore the carrying of the oxygen to all parts of the body for helping it to work properly. And so cardiovascular efficiency, or getting your heart rate up, is important in any kind of an exercise routine. The problem with this is you must be very careful that you don't start on an exercise program in which the heart rate gets up to 180 immediately and you haven't done exercise for a while. You need to move very slowly. If you haven't been on an exercise program, or for example the post-heart patient or stroke patient, starts with getting the heart rate to 90 strokes a minute, not any higher. And you can measure that easily with just your pulse rate. 15 seconds and multiply it by 4 is close enough for what is happening. If you feel your heart beginning to pulsate, you know that you have moved too vigorously too soon in that kind of an exercise. Second, you need flexibility. But you don't need as much flexibility as all of at least the women's programs are showing you. You don't really have to be able to do the split to live to 90. In fact, you don't need to do the split ever unless you want to be a cheerleader. It is beyond the normal range of movement. And so in the exercise program, another caution is those of you that are doing stretching exercises before you do sport or before you do play, what you're really doing is inviting damage before you start. The body needs to be warmed up before you start flexibility exercises. Until the last 5 years, we have thought what you do is stretching exercises, and then you go into running, and then you go into activity. What we're learning is that you start activity slow. When you feel the heart rate having raised some, so the blood is flowing, then you do your flexibility kinds of exercises. But all you need in flexibility to lose weight, to live life happily, is not to go beyond your normal range. What is your normal range? Your body tells you what your normal range is. When you start feeling a pull in your back,
you've gone beyond the normal range. When you start stretching your legs and you can hardly stand it and the next day it hurts, you went beyond the need and the normal range. Maybe not the need, but the normal range of your body. Flexibility comes quickly and flexibility goes quickly. It's the first thing to go. Your endurance will stay longer than your flexibility. So if you have an exercise for 3 weeks, then you know that you need to do something about a little flexibility. One of the values of Heart Lake is that you don't start right up. You start on a nice, gentle path. Those of you that are going to Copper Creek, Copper Falls, that took the wrong road, and so you go straight up, that's very difficult on the body, not just for endurance, because you can do it slowly, but for flexibility, because you've had to reach up too soon before your body was ready. There is now a roadway. I hope that most of you, any of you go straight up when you went? Oh, well, you're young. You're probably, one of the nice things about youth, of course, is that you don't harm your body as easily as the rest of us do. And you have to remember that you are past 29 when you start exercising, and you don't compare yourself to her skill or to any of the young skills. But and even in walking up these mountains, you don't let your kids run you up the mountains. You know, let them go. Or put them behind you and tell them to start 10 minutes later. Because it is not a natural pattern. And flexibility, touching your toes, the worst thing you can do is this. You do not bounce ever again, which means, maybe you need me up here. You also don't sit here, pull yourself out beyond and start bouncing. The bouncing stretches the elasticity in your muscle and leading down to the insertions of your muscle, and we're getting more injuries from that than from almost any other action. So as you go up in the first place on a sit-up, for example, you do it first by people holding your feet. And then as you go, you don't need to go farther than here for the exercise that's coming to your back and the strength that's coming. When I start going here, I've pulled on my back. And it's beyond the flexibility. Mm-hmm. Instead, if you want to be doing a touching your toes, you reach and move very slowly and come back. You don't bounce it. You don't bounce in any of the flexibilities anymore. And while I'm here,
knees down and knees up.
To start with, knees are down. When you get good, knees come up. You never start a routine, and that's for strength more than for flexibility, that your knees are up. Your knees are down for flexibility some, and for abdominal. Right like this, I am pulling on my back and getting plenty of abdominal work. Also, she can hold on to my feet, and then I can put my head, my hands behind my head, and we're doing skins and shirts, it looks like. And this is as far as I need. You can feel it in my here and here, and she's doing all the resistance, and this will give you strength as well as some flexibility. Now I'm good. Now hold it. And my hands behind, and I'm very trying to get up. And this is as far as I need to go. I never go beyond the normal range of your body, and particularly women don't, because you are pulling on the weakest point that we have, and that's our backs. Because we run around with lumbar lordosis, you've carried children, both out of the womb and in the womb, and it's very hard on your backs. That's why more women have back problems than men, aside from the osteoporosis that happened. Then if you really get good, she keeps her hands off and just sort of start lifting here. Men, hold on as though I'm, now pretend that I'm not there, because I'm not, I don't do these because of my back. And that's as far as you ever need to go. Now, the next problem that we've been after Bonnie Prudence for years, she's finally quit, is exercises that pull on the back. You can see my back here. When I do these leg liftings, notice what's happening?
Lifting.
Yeah, the middle of my back, which is the worst part of my back. And I can't strengthen my abdomen if it's hurting my back. And so the exercises that you want is you can lift one leg and put it down, and you can bring it up that much, and you're still getting the same thing. You can feel it in your abdomen when you attempt to do those exercises. The other thing that you're asking for trouble, and I've seen men do this before they begin their jogging, and that is a deep knee bend. Okay, and let's see if you can see my knees here. And the problem on this, on the deep knee bends, is the pressure that we're pulling. If I miss just a little bit and I lose my balance, and it happens to pull on the side here, that's not where our strength is. That's why we have so many football knee men, is if they're clipped here, and that's why it's against the rules, is you don't want to be hit on the side. And the chances in duck walking and even these things that we do for kids, we're starting to say you don't need deep knee bends. Because as you're going down, your weight is transferred and the pull is right here. Now, skiers need some of that, but you can do it with your feet flat and you're still getting the knee pulls that you need in the exercises. So care in the whole process, which is we're now helping eating, but we're also helping our sitting right now. Flexibility. Then the next problem is strength. My problem, by the way, is heat, not inability to exercise. We got to get to the next story here. But strength. What builds strength?
Repetition.
Okay, repetition is one way.
Resistance,
and that is a very simple kind of resistance that you can do for yourself, that you can do against the wall, that two people can do. How else? What else can you increase besides the amount of resistance? Okay, you can also do weight, which is a kind of resistance, really. But you can do more weight, you can do larger numbers of them, or you can do them faster. And all of those build strength. And so you can start out deciding you want to do more, you can decide that you want to do them faster, you can add weights to them. One of the important elements now that we're finding in walking, and when I get to the bottom of my t-shirt crew, you'll see the importance I see for walking. But in walking now, we're suggesting that perhaps you want to carry a pound on in each of your arms so that as you're walking then, the arms are also walking. And you're really leading off here with the arms, and everybody looks at you like you're nuts, but you know that your lungs and your heart and therefore your shoulder girdles are getting more. Now, say you don't want to do that. I have developed, and it works with a lot of women, particularly osteoporosis women, and that's all of us in some phase or another. And if you had no exercise as children, your chances of osteoporosis is much greater. If you exercised in moderation, and I'm not sure that farmers' wives do it in moderation, but that we're finding, for example, women who have been very active on the farms all their lives have less trouble with broken bones and osteoporosis than the rest of us. And why it's women, besides the hormone difficulty in menopause, the fact is that our muscles are only half that of the male in almost all parts of our body except our legs, in which we may develop up to 70 to 78% of the muscle mass of male. This is sort of on the average. But a great woman athlete
and a great male athlete weighing the same will only get about 78% in the legs and up to maybe 50 to 55% in the arm and shoulder girdle. And so what the female needs is trying to develop the muscles that she does, that we do have in relation to the waist up. And so in my walking, I spend some of my time, if you're not very arthritic here, but it's also good for the abdomen and expanding, is tightening here, putting my arms up, and just walking along this way for a minute and a half or 2 minutes or 50 yards or 100 yards. And what that is doing, put them up, all of you, for a minute. And tighten it now. Bend it. Just hang around and hold that for a while. Now breathe in and out. And notice how that expands. Okay, relax them. Put them down. You can actually do that, therefore, at almost any time. But in walking, it sort of helps. Then you get tired of that, and you have plenty of room on your path. Then put them straight out. This I don't know if you can do without taking care of your neighbor here. And this also works, by the way, to our next problem about worry. And you can do this in your chair for relaxation. Tighten them. And then in the walking, you just roll along with them. And your head bobs around. Or you can now relax and put them down. And you've also had one of the exercises for relaxation. And so when you're in the midst of worry, put them up, tighten them up, release them. And what it does is put a relaxation in your body. You can also do this at night in bed, only you do it with your legs. Right now, tighten up those legs, tighten up those muscles. Boy, look like you're tight as you can be. And put your toe up, point your toe now. Now relax. And that too gives the body a sudden ability to relax. And that's one of the things that you can do. It's a lot better than counting sheep. A whole group are going to have their pictures taken. And so they promised me that they would stay as long as they can. But strength is one of the things that you do need. And an exercise program I am very much in favor of as a part of all of your ways of life. And a lot of this you can do in just your sitting. These arm ones. The next problem is some have asked about this swinging. I'm much more leery about the swimming for arthritic movements or bursitis because you're kind of pulling on the joints. You can sort of start that by just doing it up and not the circular, which pulls in here on it, but rather just bring it up and bring it down, bring it up and bring it down. Up they go and down they go. The next thing that you can do is sort of work your way up. This is not like against your body as a flexibility, but it's just sort of going up there to heaven and then rolling back down. And you can feel those for kind of your shoulders. The other thing is in relaxing after you've done this exercise is getting your head on your chest. High blood pressure people don't do this. But the rest of you kind of put your head down, close your eyes, and let the old head roll around the neck and back down. The problem with ear people, ear problems, and high blood pressure is that it can cause dizziness. And you don't do it in a hurry, but that's kind of one of the ways, and then you sort of are breathing with it. And you can do that anytime during the day. And then let it down on your chest, and up! And that should give you a tiny little start if you've been doing this really dramatically. But that sort of is all we can really do about worrying in terms of an exercise program, is try to build your endurance, your flexibility, and your strength. And as you do that then, my next solution, of course, is to play. And in thinking about, well, how can I play? I'm 70 years old. And I call my walking is really a form of my play. And I sometimes have contests with myself to see if I can walk the whole way around the lake that I walk without thinking one academic thought. That I don't think about, I'm going to tell him this because he said that, and I don't like this, and tomorrow I'm going to organize that kid so that he understands what I'm saying. I try to walk, which is 1 mile and a quarter, which is 1/3 of what I'm doing. And that's the only part that I demand that I don't think about anything if I can help it. Now, I might want to take another lap of thinking. I have that right, as it were. But it's kind of a contest against my mind, in a sense, that I can let this sort of a way of life be an important part of my life. But I think there are a lot of other ways of playing, and I do happen to have a few of them here. This is my favorite activity. I have mostly women in my study here, but all of you men too fit into it, and in a lot of ways, because you have done basketball, football, baseball, you've done the throwing sports and the batting sports, and you're really in a better position to learn a new sport than most women who haven't really experienced, particularly those of us 40 and above, a lot of sports. Tennis is an excellent sport insofar as you are outdoors. You can make it competitive if you wish, but you can also say, I have some women that I play with that I say, this is our fun day. And then I go back, and at noon, the guys know that this isn't our fun day. This is my athletics or my sport. And I really separate these out because I need them both. In play, I think there is a freedom and a volunteerism and a bonding that occurs that's quite different than what I get out of sport. Highly competitive sport I happen to be a part of, and for me, that too is relaxing. But it's relaxing insofar as I've already prepared myself. That is, I've worked to be highly skilled so that I can enjoy it. I also get involved in it. The equipment is special equipment that I'm involved in. I also totally commit myself to it while I'm in it. And that therefore, I think it gives me an experience that the really beginner doesn't ever get, at least the first couple of years in tennis. And so if you want to play tennis, one of the things to know is that you're not going to get it in 1 year. And if you haven't played any other sport, you're not going to get it in 2 years. That you have to be willing to just hit the ball sort of across. But if you want to be competitive, that's another form, sort of the next form of play, and your partners and your opponents and the group ought to be with you. Or it ends up too much tension, and you're not in the thing for tension. You're in the for relaxation. And I find I play tennis from 10 minutes to 12 to 10 minutes to 1 on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Tuesday, Thursday, we get another extra 20 minutes to play, and I get totally involved, in the game. And it has, when I finish, I can go back to my real world. That is my real world, and sport is real to me. For most of you, however, that's pretty frustrating to be playing against someone who has that attitude. And you need to find your own level in dealing with that. But I think tennis is a great sport. If any of you are in the cities where they have racquetball is a sport any of you can learn. Badminton is a sport, unless you have permanent eye damage, you can all learn. And so it's an activity that you can do together. Because the bird comes strange, but it comes high. And it, in fact, those that have played a lot of sports aren't always good in badminton because it's coming, you can make it come slower, you can make it a slow game, you can make it a fast game. Platform tennis is a new activity, which I think is a great activity that you can think about moving with. But I think probably the bicycling is still a terribly important sport that any of you can learn, maybe with the three-wheel or the two-wheel, but it's something that most people can do as an activity and a great one. The other great sport that I am finding for all of us is for her, downhill. For the rest of us, this is really cross-country skiing. It is not downhill, but it is a sport that you can start at 60 without any trouble and do it at your own speed. It's something that you can learn here. You can learn almost anywhere except where there are thousands of people. And I suggest learning a sport, you don't move where there are thousands of people because it is too frustrating and then there is tension. You also need to take a lesson. In any sport that you start, you need to take lessons. And so you have to set aside a bit of money, or in this day and age, you can go to the senior college or junior colleges throughout the country, and they have senior citizen either free or almost free, maybe $2 or $3. So there's lots of opportunities both to take exercise and to deal in something like a cross country. I lost someplace between Greece and here my fishes. But I think fishing is a physical activity and is a great sport because it's an excuse to sit and watch nature for a lot of people. And all you have to learn is about those worms. And for some kinds of fishing now, you don't even have to worry about the worms. And so I think that fishing is a good activity. Even rowing, being in a rowboat. Swimming is probably the best all-around activity that you can do because all parts of your body are a part of it and you don't have to be great at it. You only have to take lessons along enough to not be afraid of the water. It really works like the therapy pools, which are also great for all of us, and it's something that I think all of us can do. Another activity that's particularly popular with women, but I caution you on, is aerobics. And the problem with aerobics is that they've become a dance form that the youth are great at, but that most of us are not. And you need to be very careful with aerobics.
Water aerobics does not do that.
Right. Somebody else was talking about that. That is probably everything great put together in the water aerobics. And a lot of universities and junior colleges are now moving into water aerobics, just as swimming is the all-around activity, right?
Right.
This is our swimming coach of 30 years from Gustavus Adolphus that we've been talking a lot about high competition and the values of sport and play and activities and so on. And so I think that that is a new branch that one ought to begin to explore is the water aerobics. For the problem with aerobics is the jumping, and that for women, most of us have lost some of our bone marrow and bone density by virtue of not having childhood activities. That's why it's so important for particularly the girls. Or in your postmenopausal, you did not have hormone therapy, which was in for a while, it was out. Well, believe me, it's back. And it's back in because of the osteoporosis, not just the skin and the body, and only they're doing much lower dosages. But we have lost some of that, and so we're pulling on our backs and our bodies. Some of you men who are jogging need to think twice about how much you want to jog per week. We're finding a lot of damage on the bounce for the men as well, where it is affecting the pelvis, or where it is really doing damage to many men's already damaged knees by the football world, in which almost all football players have had some kind of knee injuries. Besides, of course, you catchers in the baseball world. There's probably not a catcher left after 10 years that can move his knees exactly as he wants to. Catching, by the way, may be something that you might want to caution your granddaughters on. That our knees seem to be going the same route as men's. They don't have a great deal of strength in them. So don't let your granddaughters and daughters be catchers too long at a time. Aside, of course, from nobody should pitch forever.
Calcium supplements.
Calcium supplements, I think, are important for women. There's a lot of debate about what kind. There's no debate that it won't be helpful. And you lose some of it, and I'm not a medical personnel, but you need to talk to your doctor about it, and you should start it early, in the 30s. You probably want to be starting the calcium supplement. We simply are not drinking enough milk, cheese, and the kinds of things that we can't because of our high cholesterols as well. I mean, it really gets to be a problem here on what it is we can eat and so on. But I think it is not too late to start new sports for sort of any of us. But I think probably what I really think is that all of you can do this, except Joyce probably, who has been here, but that all the rest of us can do this. And that we should have started last Monday when we arrived. And as soon as you get off the bus, or tomorrow when you're rested, you ought to think about a walking program. That it really is good for all of us. Even those of you who have vein difficulties, that some walking is important. Now, obviously, you need to consult your doctor about how much ought I walk. You also need a good pair of walking shoes. You shouldn't be prancing around in your sandals, as you already learned up here on it. But I think that walking is one of the greatest kinds of activities that we can do and ought to do. And so what I'm thinking about here is that sometimes you have to go out on a limb. Only this limb is going to be a path, and that you really need to go on the path. And then for those of us who are into and have done our homework for the last 20 years in relation to walking and into the movement, is that this is really sort of my joy, and that if you cannot actually, then vicariously, that you can read this, which tells us no goal is too high if we climb with care and confidence. And I think that no walk is too hard if you believe in it, and if you want to help yourself to have life and to have it more abundantly and to have it sort of continuously, that's kind of my theme for today. And we have a few minutes in which we can get some questions or comments on activity.
Joanne, I heard you say earlier you're going to talk about some exercises that are harmful for women. Beside the jumping, aerobics.
Particularly lying down and raising your feet. Deep knee bends are particularly harmful for the women. Doing too much too soon of this, and all of the flexibility ones where we're trying to stretch the women. And all of our back ones where you're really trying to help the abdomen and you ruin your back. One of the best ones for women on, men can sort of do it too, is keeping your back perfectly straight up and down as you can. This is for the thighs and the abdomen, and then just leaning back. And you can see my stomach is flat for a change, holding it six and back up. And the leg exercise, where you don't come all the way, you just sort of raise your head, always on the round of the chair, if nobody's home, or somebody holding them. The value of someone holding them is that then they can do it. One of the values of aerobics, of course, is the group. And that if you can get a group to exercise, it really is more healthy. This was another inspiration I wanted to leave with you. Any other questions on the exercise or the kinds of programs that we have. For those of you that have eyes like I do, Hilda's 91, and she's still climbing mountains. So that should give us a view. Any other?
Sort of said tennis preference to racquetball for any particular reason?
No, that racquetball is really better for beginners because you can succeed better. Tennis merely is that it's out of doors more, and there's more running. But for exercise, pure exercise, racquetball is better, actually. If you are going to do racquetball, though, you do need the glass guards because you're in a small space. Some are moving to platform tennis because it doesn't take as much room, and it also can be learned rather quickly. Like I said, tennis just takes longer.
What's platform?
They're doing it in the winter states where it's built on a platform. It's like a ping pong table, or this is from Luther there to the stove here is how big the court is to the end to here. And then you play it just like tennis. Mm-hmm. Only it's a handle. It's about maybe a third the size of a tennis racket. And it's a paddle.
Pickleball.
Ah, could be. But it's a great kind of. Not to mention all of the sports that you can just do out of doors, like the new games book kinds of activities that you can do with your kids. Kids have a wonderful capture the flag out here you ought to join. I haven't quite figured out the rules, but that's what makes it great, maybe. Okay, I think it's time to...